Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Radio. Special operations military news and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Soft Rep Radio. I'm your host today, Steve Balistrieri. Joining me today, we have a very special guest. Mike Cirelli was a Marine Force Recon NCO. He was a Navy SEAL officer, did tours of duty in Iraq, I believe Afghanistan as well. He's been around the world. He's what I would call one of the subject matter experts on leadership and teaching leadership. And there is a dearth of that in the civilian world. And he's just written a book, and it is a fantastic one. It's called The Talent War, How Special Operations and Great Organizations Win on Talent. And I think our listeners today are really going to get into this. I think they're going to love it. And when you listen to Mike, I think you're going to understand exactly where he's coming from on this. So before I get any further, Mike, welcome to the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time today, especially just before Thanksgiving.
Dude, I'm humbled to be here, and Steve, I appreciative that you'd even have me on. And thank you for that intro. Just one fact check. Didn't make it to Force Recon. I was Battalion Recon, First Recon Company at the time, then okay. Turned into a battalion. Tried out for Force Recon, loved those guys, but got picked up for an officer program before that came to fruition.
Okay, my mistake. I thought you were, yeah. Because when you were in recon, that was before they were special ops, right?
It was, And the driving factor of why I switched over to the SEALs is that, you know, as a recon Marine, when we'd step on ship with the SEALs, dude, they had more funding. They were getting missions, and, you know, we were losing out in the Marine Corps because of that. And that's why I switched over to SOCOM and tried out for the SEALs.
Okay. Just fill in our listeners just a little bit. You don't have to go too in depth if you don't want to about your military career. And how you ended up where you're at right now with the, you know, being an author and, you know, a talent coordinator, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's funny that you say author. That still doesn't strike, you know, hit home with just a dude that wrote a book on a subject that he's passionate about with two other guys that are good dudes. But, you know, I enlisted in the Marine Corps fairly soon after high school. I'd met a Force Recon Marine. And I'm like, dude, I want to be just like that guy. Humbly confident, articulate, respectful of everyone. People just gravitated towards him. And you talk about it, like the perfect recruiting tool. It's that Army Green Beret out there who's, you know, showing the organization in just the best light. That's what draws young men into the military like me for good reason. But I made it to 1st Recon Battalion, went through the same school that the 1st Recon guys went through. I was just Q Junior. Became a scout sniper in the Marine Corps. And then after a few years in the Marine Corps, said, hey, we want to make you an officer. So they sent me back to school to finish my degree. The war kicked off. I finished school in 3 years, doubled up on credits to get out of there and join the war effort. And before I did, after Marine OCS, I put an inter-service transfer in and went to BUDS, tried out for the SEALs. Served a few deployments, my first initial deployments in Iraq, Battle of Ramadi, Battle of Sadr City. And then after that, went back to instruct young SEAL officers. I was their last line of defense to turn them into ground force commanders, as we call it. And while I was there, I received an invitation to try out for JSOC. Made it through that assessment and selection, spent the majority of my career at JSOC. 10 total combat deployments, 11 deployments in total. And just consider myself fortunate to have served alongside some of the most selfless men and women who I truly believe are the very best that America has. And that's why I wrote this book, to paint veterans in a different light and also help businesses as they look to form their own elite teams.
Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to the book and you talk about this, there's such a misconception, I think, in the civilian world and, you know, big business about what military leadership really is. And, you know, I think misconceptions about how military people are when they bring them into their organization. Excuse me. And you talked about that in your book. And, you know, I think we've all had experiences with that. I know I did. When I got to a civilian company, I did an interview with people. And when they found out I was SF, they were like, hey, we hope you don't get too stressed out here in the interview. And I was like, what would you think is going to happen here? You know, it was like they were treating you with kid gloves because they think, you know, that special operators as a whole, not just SF guys. I mean, they think we're kind of like these mindless drones who just follow orders and go blow stuff up. And it was kind of, I took it insultingly at the time.
It's so, Steve, I've got a theory on this, and it's, you know, it's both the good and the bad, but it comes from the same source. If I'm going to make an assessment about what like investment banking is like, I'm going to base that off of the movie Wall Street or Wolf of Wall Street, because I've never been in that community or books I read. Hollywood, because 99% of Americans don't serve in the military, their opinions about the military are formed from Hollywood. Hollywood is the greatest recruiting tool for the military. It's also the worst enemy in painting veterans in a negative light. You look at Platoon, which is the Vietnam era that, you know, a lot of Vietnam veterans hated that movie because they're like, hey, that paints us in a really horrible light, and that's not how we want to be conveyed. You know, my first time, because I didn't come from the military lineage, I came from the Bay Area. And so I was stationed at Camp Pendleton. One day, because I was one of the only dudes with the car. I had a Nissan Pathfinder. We literally squeezed 10 dudes for the six-hour drive from San Diego to the Bay Area to go stay at my folks' home for 1 weekend. And of course, we partied our asses off. But when I came in, my mom was shocked because, you know, hey, part of the military culture is sometimes guys have sleeve tattoos. And she's like, when you guys walked in, it was like a biker gang walked into the house. You know, they cut. And she said, I made the snap judgment. And she told me this after the weekend. She's like, I've never met more respectful, articulate, like young men in my life. And she was like, she looked at me and she's like, I'm so proud of what you're doing. Because, of course, in 98, they had reservations about me joining the military. You know, that wasn't a highlight or a great time in the military. You know, funding wasn't great. We didn't have great training. And, you know, every time as I went to the SEALs, I would take my platoon or my troop to Silicon Valley to meet with business leaders. The business leaders would come to me and be like, I have never met more result mission-oriented men in my life. I actually took a group of SEAL leaders from JSOC to Silicon Valley in 2013. We met with Larry Ellison, Sergey Brin, Bill Campbell arranged this whole trip. He's the secret coach of Silicon Valley, who's no longer with us. Carol Bartz of Yahoo, Mark Benioff. I mean, the list goes on. Mark Andreessen, authors themselves. And each of them were like, if I had a talent pool like this, I would hire all these guys in a heartbeat. And people, again, you know, we had a purpose during the global war on terror. We believed in what we were doing. And some of my guys, enlisted guys, have two master's degrees. Some of them are at Harvard or Wharton right now. And they got their undergraduates at American Military University or Trident Military University or Norwich. They got it while they were on deployment. And now they're getting master's from Ivy League schools. That's how intelligent these guys are. That's how driven these men and women are. I mean, these are people that companies couldn't pay enough money for to step in, run a respective department or team within their businesses, and drive the organization to a new level. And that's what America, but this book ain't about that. It's more about how special operations assesses and flexes and builds their team based off character. But yeah, I think it hits home that, you know, this talent pool is probably one of the most prolific talent pools in America, and it's the most overlooked as well.
I firmly believe that. And you talk about it in the book, because basically, you know, when you're hiring talent, whether it be in the special ops community or in the business community, it's all about finding the right person. And, you know, when reading your book, you know, one of the things that stands out right away is the, you know, the foreword was written by Jocko, who's a guy that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I've read some of his stuff.
Who's it? Yeah.
Jocko.
Yeah.
And then come to find out you guys serve together. I've watched some of his podcasts. I think he's one of those guys that you put up there as like one of the most intriguing characters there are, because he's a guy you put up there because I think he epitomizes everything that we look for in a special operator. And, you know, reading his forward in there set the tone for the book right away. But it's all about the people. That's what it comes down to, people. Everyone looks for this or that, but it always comes down to people and leadership. And that's what, you know, you were talking about in the book where you said talent and leadership equal victory. And I thought that stood out right away. And it all starts at the beginning about assessing and selecting the right people.
And Steve, yeah, I've got to highlight to the audience, because we talked before we started recording, that this book actually starts off about a story about the 5th Special Forces Group, which we all know, you know, that's mm-hmm. your community known as, and what these small 12-man teams did against an estimated enemy force of Taliban and Al-Qaeda to the tune of 50 to 75,000. A few hundred Green Berets defeated a far superior numerical force by building coalitions with friendly Afghans. So I made it a very particular note that SEAL wrote a book and started off about Army Special Forces.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of community. I highly respect it. I don't really play into the whole, hey, who's better, SEALs or Special Forces. If I were to create my version of Rainbow Six, it would just be that. There'd be guys from the SF community. There'd be dudes from JSOC. There would be some SEALs in there. There'd be some Force Recon Marines, now MARSOC. You know, each community draws exceptional talent. But Jocko writing the foreword, Jocko was a mentor of mine. I served in his task unit during the Battle of Ramadi. And the funny thing about leadership is I don't think there's an original thought on the concept of leadership out there anymore. I know I don't have an original thought. I am a compilation of great mentors and coaches, Jocko being one of it. A lot of Marine officers and Marine senior enlisted, a lot of SEAL senior enlisted, and a lot of SF officers and senior enlisted, because I got to be a guest instructor at phase two at the SF qualification course for about 2 months. I was blown away by the systems that you guys had put in place to assess talent. And, you know, Chris Fussell, who penned the book Team of Teams for Stanley McChrystal, was one of my commanding officers. It's just a long line of great leaders that I had the privilege to serve for, and hopefully I'm carrying on their name in a positive light.
Yeah, and you know, when you wrote the book, you had a couple of co-authors, really intriguing people as well. Josh Cotton, who worked with Navy Special Operators, Marine Corps Special Operators, SF guys, and George. And I caught part of a podcast you and George did that was really, really good. How did you guys all get together?
So Dr. Cotton and I met after I retired. I started a foundation with the help of General Tony Kukulow, Admiral Bobby Inman, who's also the former director of the CIA, and Admiral McCready. And Dr. Cotton had been hired by Special Operations to come in and assess how we assess and select, and hopefully design some assessments to try to predict who would have a higher chance of making it through the training. He was blown away by the caliber of talent that we have in the community, to the point where he created something called the Elite Performance Indicator that now businesses are using to assess potential, you know, high-performing individuals during the hiring process. So he brought what he learned by watching Special Operations and brought it to the business world. And so we've remained close. We have conversations about talent. And, you know, funny enough about Dr. Cotton, what I love is his humility. He'll give you a theory, and he'll always follow it up with, but I don't know. Like, the data has to be collected for decades to validate it. And then George Randall, an old Army dog, Mustang, enlisted to officer back in the 80s, 90s, had been in talent acquisition for 20 years. This is the power of LinkedIn. Reached out to me, said, hey, I saw you're in the space. Highly admire what you're doing with VF Overwatch, which is my military executive search firm, and said, would love to meet at Kirby Lane, which is an iconic breakfast place in Austin. We did. We've been friends ever since, to the point where I actually asked him to serve as the pastor at my wife and I's wedding. So, you know, consider him a brother. And he definitely has the expertise in the hiring realm, talent acquisition and executive search. He's made over 80,000 hires or been involved in, stood up the veteran hiring program at Hewlett Packard, KPMG before it was bought by Deloitte, and Booz Allen Hamilton. So in terms of him prepping like vets for interviews in the job market, I've never found anyone as astute or as skilled as he is.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things you talked about in the book, a lot of, you know, when you talk in industry and how people hire, they hire for experience. And a lot of times they hire from outside their own organization. And it goes against everything that, you know, we believe in, because, you know, in special ops, whether it be in a Navy SEAL team or SFA team, we promote from within, because we train, we train operators to basically take over our job, which a lot of people in the civilian world are kind of loathe on that, because they try to steer away from that. They're always afraid somebody's going to take their job. And it comes down to, you know, hire for character, train for the skill, as you put out in one of your chapters. I know I'm kind of bouncing around here on your book, but
And Steve, that's a great point to accentuate. So let me preface this, my response with this. The default mode for human beings is actually to follow the path of least resistance, which means to be lazy and to choose the easy things that are objective and easy to measure. Which, if you're hiring somebody, it's very easy to look at somebody's resume and say, oh, they have 5 years of marketing experience, but this candidate over here who has great character has 0 years of marketing experience. Let's go with the path of least resistance, the candidate that induces the least fear, the person with industry experience. And industry experience is not predictive of success. You've seen this. You've seen young kids come through the 18 X-ray program. For the audience, that is what the SF community designed, namely, I think Jerry Boykin, General Boykin, was very transformative with that effort and basically got kids out of college and high school to come direct and try out directly for the special forces. And what they found is that they don't bring any bad habits and that they were as successful at becoming special forces Green Berets as somebody that had 5 years of experience in the Army, if not more successful. So, you know, if special operations hired for industry experience, we wouldn't have anyone to hire because it doesn't exist. I can't go to a high school in an auditorium of 100 kids and say, hey, raise your hand if you have a special operations experience. Nobody raises. I say, oh, sorry, guys, that sucks. Go join the French Foreign Legion. Come back after you have 5 years. Now, but that didn't deter us from building these elite teams. All we had to do was say, Roger, this is the talent pool that we draw from. So we need to become very good at assessing character in people with high potential. And that's what special operations set to task of designing, something called assessment and selection, which when you look at how special operations does this, regardless of community, it basically is the world's longest behavioral interview. And we take people with zero industry experience and we turn them into professionals in a matter of 2 years, highly capable soldiers. In fact, the most capable soldiers in the world. And then we deploy them in small numbers against numerically superior forces, and time again, they emerge successful, delivering strategic impacts for our nation. So as these companies look at the talent pool that are applying for these positions, you have to change your mindset. You have to become, as Jocko says, default aggressive and assess for character. Ultimately, the reason Special Operations has designed the training the way it is not because we're sadistic and we like to see people in pain. No, we understand that it is only at one's limits, their mental and physical limits, that true character emerges. And that's what we're looking for. Funny enough, Brian Decker, who we both discussed before we hit record, a well-known Special Forces Lieutenant Colonel that sort of is credited with revolutionizing how Special Forces assesses and selects talent, said that is also the point at one's limits that skills, hard skills, actually degrade and all you're left with is character. COVID is a perfect example of where people thought they had a great workforce, but actually when chaos hit, a VUCA environment, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, the environment we thrive in as special operations, the business world felt that and a lot of their workforces were not equipped with the character needed to thrive in a very environment described by fear and uncertainty.
Yeah, in fact, you were mentioning Brian Decker earlier because, you know, when I'm going to date myself here, but back in 88, I was one of the instructors when they first started selection and assessment. Back then, we used to call it Special Forces Orientation and Training. We call it SFOT, the first few classes. And because we had never had an assessment and selection course, you know, when they brought instructors from the different groups into the Special Warfare Center, they said to us, well, you guys are going to be working at selection or SFOT, which is now SFAS. And they said, but before you can assess people, you have to actually go through the course, which didn't go over well because, you know, for the older guys who would been in, you know, the operational groups, being reduced back to a candidate for a couple of weeks while you go through that wasn't on the top of everyone's list, but then it all sunk in and how it's all supposed to work, because this is where I think that's the, you know, and you talk about it in the book, you know, when somebody, they can go into an interview and always put their best foot forward and, you know, be personable and be charming and, you know, schmooze and, but you don't really know that person's character until he's cold, he's wet, he's tired, he's starving, and he has a bunch of things being thrown in his face, and he has to make sound decisions and work as a member of a team. That's when you find out who these guys are. And I remember when classes start, and I'm sure guys in the SEAL teams did it, you know, we'd all look at guys and say, oh, this guy looks like a stud. He's probably going to be fine. Yeah. Those are the guys that kind of dropped off the, you know, then right, as you call it, ringing the bell. But our guys would just, you know, raise their hand that they want out. Those were a lot of times the first guys that failed. And the guys that, you know, you wouldn't think would be standing there at the end were. And it was because they had those character traits that we're all looking for. And it definitely, it carries over into the civilian world, does it not?
Without a doubt. Here's the thing is, a lot of people hire in their image, or they hire for what they think is culture fit, which actually is likability. And that's what a lot of companies companies in the business world tend to like grab onto these buzzwords. It goes in phases. Diversity, inclusion being one of them, or I'm trying to think of the other one is about candor. And a lot of people are grasping onto this concept of culture fit. The culture is important. You have to be very intentional about your culture. But what a lot of people are confusing with culture fit is actual likability. And because you want to share a beer with somebody does not mean that they are a good fit for the team or because they think like you. Ultimately, within special operations, and I tell this to people, is I'm like, if you think I liked all the SEALs on my team or if all the SEALs on my team liked me, you're wrong. But as professionals, we knew we were a high-performing team that could put their egos and their feelings aside to achieve a common goal. And that's what really a company is. You're building a high-performing team. You're not building a family. We all have those. You're building a high-performing team. You don't need to like everyone on your team. It, even from a sports perspective, if you go back and watch about, you know, the Michael Jordan era of the Bulls or the New York Yankees when, you know, they had Jeter and A-Rod. Not all of them got along, but they could perform as a team, and that's what matters. The business world has to be very careful here. Your talent is not going to look like a particular size, sex, gender, sexual orientation. It's all over the place. And Steve, let me share this last story with you. In Buds, there was a kid who was really unassuming, and here I am, a recon Marine and a scout sniper, stepping into SEAL training, and I had instant sort of respect from the other students. And they did gravitate towards me. And I was sort of, you know, the standout leader in that class because I'd been through those environments before, thrived out of every school I went to, was usually the honor man, even out of Marine OCS. And I just sort of looked past this one kid, shrugged my shoulders and thought, oh, you probably won't be here in a week or two. That kid went on to pass SEAL training, stood right next to me in Hell Week, then checked into SEAL Team 3 with me. Became a special operations medic, which we call an 18 Delta. So went through that school, which is not an easy school. Went to sniper school. And on our first deployment, we ended up in the same task unit during the Battle of Ramadi. This individual was awarded the Silver Star, then went on another deployment with me to the Battle of Sadr City, where he performed. Navy said, we want to make you an officer. They sent him to the University of San Diego, where he got a 3.98 in mathematics, which I don't know who takes mathematics as a undergrad subject, but he got a 3.98. Decided he wanted to become a doctor. The Navy sent him to Harvard because he got in. Became a medical or Harvard medical educated doctor. Served as a doctor for a few years and said, why not? I'll apply for NASA. Out of 18,000 applicants, he was one of 12 selected. And he did this all. SEAL, medic, Silver Star, Harvard educated doctor and NASA astronaut all by the age of 34. And I'm the guy who thought I knew what talent looks like. And I was wild. His name is Dr. John M. And he's one of the most amazing human beings you'll ever meet. But 9 out of 10 people would have glanced right past him because he was, at the time, a scrawny Asian kid, Korean American from LA.
Yeah, I saw a story on him in Military Times not too long ago because they talked about the same things. And we're going to get into culture fit in just a minute. But real quick, I have to pause for a second and read an ad from one of our sponsors from ExpressVPN. And then we'll get right back to this. Have you ever had a time when you search for something online and you didn't want others knowing about it? I know most of you are probably thinking, well, why don't you just use incognito mode on your computer? Let me tell you something, folks. Incognito mode doesn't hide your actual activity. Doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can still see every single website you've visited. That's why when we're at home, we never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter if you get your internet from Verizon, Comcast, or any other local ISP. ISPs in the U.S. can legally sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their servers so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps your all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most of the time, you won't even realize you have ExpressVPN on. It runs seamlessly in the background, and it's very, very easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button, and you're protected. It's available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart television. So there's no excuse for you not to be using it. Protect your online activity today with VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/softrep, and you can get an extra 3 months free with a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/softrep. Check it out, expressvpn.com/softrep, to learn more. Okay, we're talking with Mike Cirelli. Excuse me for reading that for a second, but I had to make sure we take care of our folks that take care of us. So,
absolutely,
Mike, when you talked about culture fit, and you wrote about this in the book, it immediately struck something in my mind. And you talk in the book about sports teams. One of the jobs I've had is I've covered the NFL, which is a big passion of mine. And I sat in on an interview with Bill Belichick from the New England Patriots that won 6 Super Bowls in the last 2 decades. And they're probably one of the most successful teams ever, really. And it's fascinating talking to him because, and you talk about this in the book, they said, what's the toughest part of coaching modern day athletes? And he said, getting them to buy into a team first mentality. He said, you would think, everyone talks about team this and team that, but getting 53 individuals to completely buy in to being selfless, but putting the team ahead of their own personal success, maybe individual success for the betterment of the team, is the toughest part of coaching. And I think you hit the nail on the head right there when in your book, and you talked about, the culture fit. It's not so much, like you said, likability, but it's putting the team first. And that's a big thing with special operators. We always put the team ahead of everyone else.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health 8 kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro? amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health-Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Yeah, and that's tough for any human to do. I mean, let's be honest here. You know, the men and women in special operations, and again to the audience, there are women in special operations that hold a multitude of functions and roles, and they're screened just as heavily as our special operators. But these are A-type personalities with their own agendas, their own ideas, and that's okay. We encourage that. We want people to challenge the way we approach problem sets. We want them to challenge the way we think. We almost demand a healthy disrespect for authority within our culture. The way I coined it is we want people to push back and think outside the box. But at the end of the day, even though you have your own egos and your own agendas, if you don't have the ability to put your needs as secondary to the overall organization, then you're not going to be in that community for very long. You're not a team player. But here's the thing too, is you've got to explain it to a young 23-year-old, SEAL or Green Beret or MARSOC Raider. Here's why you want to put the team first. Because if the team wins, that ultimately comes back to benefit you in the long term to a greater extent. And a lot of people in the business world don't understand that. You know, hey, I'm the top salesperson for this organization. I made the most revenue, which means I made the most commissions. But as a whole, the organization is not meeting its metrics and it's getting decimated by its competition. Does that number one salesperson in a underperforming organization, does that title really matter? No. But if I'm that top salesperson, I say, hey, you know what? I've got some best practices that I can share with these other salespeople. Because if I can bring all the other salespeople in this organization up to my level, well, guess what? We'll start to dominate our competition. We'll start to dominate our respective industry or market space. And you just don't see a whole lot of that in the business world.
No, and I've run into that, like I told you myself. It's eye-opening when after you've spent most of your, you know, adult life in the military and then, I don't want to say we're institutionalized, but we get a little institutionalized when it comes to the way we're used to seeing things done and the way we treat leadership and we foster it. And that there's really not a lot of that. There's not enough of it, I should say, in the civilian world. I'm not saying it's totally absent, but it's definitely lacking in a lot of places. And, it's very interesting because they, again, I go back to, I think it was around page 95 in your book, you talk about they hire industry experience over character. And that's one of those things that, you know, we look at in special operations. You talk about assessment and selection. We do this all the time. And a lot of people are under this misconception, oh, once you pass, you know, your assessment and selection, you're good to go. You're being assessed for the rest of your career. It just, as you pass, you talk about it in the book, as you pass one gate, another gate opens and you're expected to do more and more and more. And with that comes more responsibility. And that's something that I think could definitely carry over more to the civilian community.
So, you know, it's interesting. And Steve, if you look back and try to understand why you use that word institutionalized, I think you'd probably agree with me that because that's how we're described by the private sector. Like, these veterans are institutionalized. And maybe we are in the context of that word, but when you're institutionalized in values like selflessness, drive, resiliency, adaptability, emotional strength, team ability, is that really institutionalized, or is that the right way of doing things?
That's the absolute right way. And one of the things that you talk about in your book, and I think a lot of people, especially in the civilian community, are under some misconceptions when it comes to special operators. You talk about how the Navy SEALs realized that, we didn't get to where we were in the military without having an ego. Because when you say to yourself, I want to be one of the best of the best, and that takes a little bit of ego, and we all have that. And you just mentioned that a minute ago. But at the same time, that humility steps in, because even though you're very confident in your own ability, you have to understand, one, there's always room. You can always get better. There's going to be other people that are going to be strong in other areas. I think a lot of people think, oh, well, he's a Navy SEAL. He's a Green Beret. He's going to be, you know, this arrogant person that nobody can talk to in the room. And that's the exact opposite of what makes us what we are.
I've had this conversation with Jocko and actually another guy named Rich Devinny, who I served with at Naval Special Warfare Development Group. He ran assessment and selection and sort of, made some sweeping changes to how they run that as well. He's got a book called The Attributes, 25 Hidden Drivers to Optimal Performance, which comes out in January. And so, ego, we actually like to say it's pride. So pride can drive you to do amazing things. If your pride gets out of balance, it develops into ego, and ego can be your downfall. But what Rich Devinny also talks about, and he's studied high performers, is there is a bit of narcissism. In all high performers, there is a bit of narcissism. And as he was explaining this to me, I'm like, that makes total sense. It doesn't mean they're off the charts narcissists. No, but they are driven to the point of where they're going to drive results and nothing's going to stop them. And as he's explaining it, it totally makes sense. There is a bit of narcissism in all high performers that drives them to accomplish great things. But yeah, definitely pride within the special operations community is what drives us to continually elevate the bar. But you and I have seen it, Steve, where that pride can turn into ego, which can turn into complacency. And we've seen, we're not saying that special operations is immune to underperformers. We're not saying that. We've seen certain units, certain ODAs or SEAL platoons that have bad leadership, that develop ego, become complacency. And guess what? We made the mistake of deploying them overseas. And it's those units that actually do bad things, sometimes do unethical things that make the front page. Because when special operations does something unethical, you can guarantee it's on the cover of Wall Street Journal or USA Today.
Absolutely.
But we've seen our share of bad leaders in the special operations community, but we learn from it. And that's actually the feedback loop we talk about in the book. Mm-hmm. Is that when somebody made it through our very long 2-year assessment and selection process and goes on to take a leadership billet in special operations and then does something unethical, we as communities come together and say, what did we miss in assessing and selecting that individual into our community? And how do we change the process so we never let somebody like that in again? Or was it they served under some very bad mentors within the special operations community that led them to believe a certain behavior was acceptable? But we have those conversations. Businesses don't do that. Most of them.
Yeah,
I hate to make accusations.
I'm sorry, I kept interrupting you. I was just going to say, I remember my first team sergeant in SF, who's a guy I looked up to, especially when you're a young guy, you're just fresh out of, you know, the Q course, and you look to your team sergeant, that's your mentor. He's your coach. He's your trainer. He's the guy that's going to, as he used to say, I'm going to train you to do my job, because that's my job, is to make you, you know, the eventual team sergeant. He used to say, and one of the things that it stuck with me, and I think you mentioned it in your book, there's not bad teams, there's bad leaders. Because when a team fails, it starts at the top with the leadership. And I think that, I mean, I think that strikes home 100% of the time. And we're not immune, like you said, we're not immune to it. I mean, we're not perfect either. Our assessment and selection, guys have slipped through that probably shouldn't have been on the teams. We're not perfect, but I think we do it a lot better than everyone else is.
Hey, dude, I come from a community which in the last year with the SEAL community, we've had a lot of front page moments. And, you know, a testament to the camaraderie between the different special operations communities. My Green Beret buddies will call me and be like, hey, you guys are really representing well right now. And I'm like, I know. But the second something you identify a bad behavior in your organization, you got to get it out. And we're pretty good about that. And again, you've got to learn from it. A lot of businesses, as I was saying, when they have a bad hire, they're like, oh, it was just a bad hire, and they move on and start the process over again without thinking about what led to that moment and how they could potentially avoid those behaviors or select a candidate that represents the values that they really align. And I want to come back to culture fit. A good definition of culture fit for companies moving forward is, do this candidate's values align with our organization? That's what culture fit is. Do they have the same values? Now, their personality may be different. They may be sort of a grumpy character. And again, going back to Rich Devinney, the Navy SEAL I served with the book coming out, he talks about authenticity. I would rather have somebody whose values align with me, but maybe they're just a grumpy character. But if they're grumpy all the time, then they're actually being authentic, which means I can trust that person. They're genuine. And a lot of companies look for, again, that big personality that everyone likes and everyone wants to have a beer with. But you and I have seen those personalities in the special operations community that make it through the process. And it's usually those loud guys that are nowhere to be seen when the work requires rolling up the sleeves. They're off schmoozing somebody else and running their mouth.
Yeah. Yep. We've all seen those guys. And you know, we used to call them politicians in SF, because you'd get somewhere and they were off, you know, trying to build rapport with somebody while everyone else is doing the work. But, you know,
exactly.
Again, we're not perfect. I mean, we've let guys in that probably shouldn't have been, you know. I'm sure somebody out there is saying, yeah, Steve, you're one of them. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's the way it is. But, you know, one of the things you talked about, and again, I'm bouncing around your book because I have all these notes scribbled, the special operations truths that we all know and how it relates to the business truths. Number one is always the best. Humans are more important than hardware. And again, you talked about that in your book. Human capital is the most critical resource. Quality is better than quantity. I think that speaks for itself. I mean, a lot of these companies try to hire, as you said, just to fill a seat, and they're not worried about, you know, are they getting the right people? Special operations forces can't be mass produced. I think we both know that it's never been an easy process, and you just can't say, you know, we ran into this in the late 80s, you know, when they were trying to build up the Special Operations Command. The people from the Pentagon said, we need this many guys this year. Well, that's not going to work, because the standards are saying the same. You know, it's like, if we get that many guys in that are meeting the standards, by all means, they're going to be Green Berets. But if they don't, if we're only getting 20% of that, then guess what? And we're going to be 80% short. But that's the way it is. And you can't create, competent operational SOF guys after emergencies occur. It has to be a long, drawn out, as you said, a 2-year process just to get your foot in the door. And, you know, we talked about, I think you mentioned earlier, you know, it's a world-class talent pool, but it's shrinking every year. It's getting harder and harder to find those kind of guys. And the last one, most special operations forces require non-SOF assistance. And, you know, you talk about that in the book. We have some of the best logistics and support personnel that support SOF operations. And those people are assessed and selected for their own, you know, jobs that they'll have. They might not be operators, but they're just as important as us to make sure that we're able to go out and do our job. And again, in the business world, it's the same thing. They have to have all departments pulling in the same way. I think that this is like, this is it in a nutshell. And I don't think enough companies do this. Excuse me.
Yeah, you know, the funny one I love, if you look at all those, for a business leader, listen, there's five special operations truths are the foundation of special operations. And each one of the five talks about how important people are. It's not your technology. It's not your systems. It's your people. Technology doesn't commercialize itself. People do. Technology doesn't sell itself. People do. And mm-hmm. that's why you're admitting, yeah, the quality is better than quantity. Hey, dude, no one summed this up better than a guy named Colonel Charlie Beckwith, who was a Vietnam veteran, a very big personality. He drove the creation of what today is the Army component of JSOC. And he said, I would rather go down the river with 7 studs than 100 shitheads. And that sums it up. If you've got a leader like this who was very disruptive and a pioneer within his respective area, say, I'd rather go with a handful of absolute high performers than take 100 people with me. That says something, especially into a scenario where your life is on the line. And that's why those few dozen ODAs of Green Berets went against a much larger force and came out on top. They had higher character. They had all the attributes that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda lacked.
That's it sums it up in a nutshell. It's the same thing you guys went through in Ramadi. And, you know, in part of your book, you talk about preparing for war, which business, it's war without people getting killed, but it's the same thing. And, you know, you hire for character, you train for skill, and, you know, it comes down to that. I think a lot of companies, again, you talk about they don't have the right people in HR. They don't have the right, I guess, mindset of what they're actually trying to find to, you know, for these companies. And again, it comes down to like the SOF people, the special operations community. You know, we have the kind of, I think, and you talk about it in the book, generalists who have all this experience all over the world. You know, and they're looking for a guy with a little niche in the private sector where they're over specialized. And I think this is a big thing that where, you know, special ops guys are hands down a better hire than some of these guys who didn't have that kind of background.
Brian Decker and I have talked about this at length. Is there seems to be an over specialization within the market space. If you're hiring for a very select role for somebody that has to be a coder, yes, they have to have that competency. But when you look at management, leadership, actually generalists are more equipped. I mean, this is what David Epstein wrote about in the book Range, why generalists triumph in a specialized world. And the reason that I chose to make an executive search firm only source military leaders, that's who we put in front of companies, is because they're the ultimate definition of generalists. If you look at an Army Green Beret, one, they've been through the most rigorous selection process that no business can replicate. Then they were sent to Iraq, a very specific culture with a very unique set of challenges. And on the next deployment, they were in Afghanistan. Same thing, a very unique culture with a very unique set of challenges. And then after that, they went to Somalia, and the same thing. And they've been placed in all these different scenarios. And when that Green Beret chooses to get out after 10 years, one, they probably already have an undergrad degree, if they were enlisted, possibly a master's. And you're talking to somebody that faced so many different problem sets in so many different scenarios under the most extreme pressure. And now they have one of the widest experience bases in the world for which you can throw any challenge at them, and they are more equipped than a specialist to solve an array of problems. COVID, again, is a perfect example for which, you know, military members have proven for the most part unflappable during these last 6 to 8 months. They're like, yep, this like totally hails in comparison to anything that we saw during the global war on terror. We're good. They almost like wipe the dust off their shoulder and says, business as usual. We'll find a way to maneuver within this environment. And a lot of companies, we do the leadership consulting side. When they ran into COVID, their workforces lacked the character to thrive in a VUCA environment.
Yeah, and a lot of that is adaptability. And you talk about that in the book. I mean, the one thing that, you know, special operators can do is adapt to any, you talk about that, you know, any environment. If it's Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, Somalia, all very different, but, you know, our guys can adapt to that. And I think a lot of the people that are out there in the civilian workforce, they're not wired to adapt, I don't think. You know, it's just you have to have that drive to succeed. But you also think, you know, the one thing that special operators do is we accept the fact that you're going to throw something at us that we've probably never done before, but we're going to find a way to get it done. And I think that's, you know, when you're talking about adaptability, that's what I think what the SOF community does the absolute best.
Yeah. And, you know, why is adaptability so important? Is because the business space, the private sector, is defined as an ever-changing environment. You know, the digital transformation has changed everything. We're still very much in the midst of that transformation. And when you hire somebody, why adaptability should always be a hiring requirement is you're asking yourself, hey, I'm hiring this person for what I need now. But does this person have the curiosity and adaptability to be relevant to this organization and to drive results 10 years from now when the market space in our company looked very different? And of all the interviews we did, because this book also, we interviewed a lot of what I call private sector warriors who are renowned within their space, particularly the HR space. Patty McCord, we talked about Patty McCord, we didn't interview her. Tracy Keough, who's the second highest paid CHRO in the world. She's the CHRO of Hewlett Packard, the actual person that found Meg Whitman to lead that organization, is they all talked about they hire not only for what they need now, but for what they need 10 years from now, and how that curiosity, the attributes of curiosity and adaptability are key in their decision-making process. So, you know, people that were not adaptable, again, you go to COVID, and a lot of organizations are no longer with us because they lacked that organizational trait.
Okay. And, you know, and again, I'm bouncing around your book because I made so many notes here. You talk about the, you know, in the civilian world, the hiring process. One of the things that always, you know, irks me when I've done interviews is when they ask the question and you write about it in your book. And that's why I circled that, because I was like, damn, this is like one of those things that grinds my gears. When a hiring manager says, why should we hire you? And it's like, you talk about it in the book. That's one of the things I was like, isn't that the question I should be asking you? You should be answering that yourself. It's like, I hate that question. And, you know, it's
No one knows, like you said, their own company like they do. It's not their job to know why you should hire them. If that's your job, right? So I don't know. It's just one of those things. I'm bouncing around. I know I'm bouncing. I'm probably driving you crazy here. I'm bouncing all around your book, but you make so many good comments in here. And this is like great stuff. But so tell me and tell our listeners, how is the leadership going? I know you teach a lot of that. Are companies actually, are they being receptive to what you guys are teaching now?
Yeah, I've got to hand it to what Jocko Willink and Leif Babin, the two co-authors of Extreme Ownership, have done. One, you know, Jocko will be the first to tell you this is not proprietary information. Jocko and Leif are like avid readers, and all they read is books about military leadership and war. And they took all these great nuggets from leaders like General Patton and David Hackworth, and the list goes on. And they basically took military leadership and even the leadership manuals designed by the Army and the military and basically packaged something in such a simplistic, easily digestible leadership system called Extreme Ownership. And so they've been working with companies since, I want to say, like 2011. The book came out in 2015. The amount of consulting engagements we have through the companies called Echelon Front is hard to keep up with. And the companies that pick ownership over extreme ownership have seen their cultures change. And it's also, it's a humility to, you know, for a lot of these business leaders who have built these amazing organizations, who never went through a leadership development program, come to us and say, hey, you know what? I don't think anyone sort of formally taught me how to lead. And so because of that, I'm not like the best equipped to teach my people in the correct forms of leadership. And so when a company owner or CEO says that, it's just like it's the driving factor for me. You know, this company is going to buy in. And when the companies buy in, again, they've seen the cultures shift to a much more positive mindset, to people working together as a team, communicating in a different way. And again, the metrics in terms of business metrics, from increased revenue, decreased safety incidents if they're in a blue collar environment, higher profit margins, higher customer satisfaction, and equally as important, high employee engagement. People are engaged. There's a growth mindset. The results have been phenomenal. Again, that company is Echelon Front. You can go to echelonfront.com and contact the director of operations there. But beyond the keynote speaking and the workshops, what they call them leadership development and alignment programs have proven their worth for a lot of organizations.
All right. Well, I've taken up a lot of your afternoon, and I know I've bounced all around your book probably in going in circles, but I really want to thank you for taking the time today. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about with your book, with your training seminars before we cut this off and we all go enjoy our Thanksgiving weekend?
Absolutely. You know, well, the book, The Talent War, you can pick it up anywhere books are sold. And we do have a company called EFOverwatch.com if you need help sourcing talent, or if you need help creating a world talent acquisition process. I've got a group of very seasoned, proven, CHROs and talent acquisition executives. But one, Steve, always good to connect with former special operations leaders. You set the stage for my generation to come in and crush it. And hopefully we did the same for the next generation. I will tell you this, Steve, I spoke to about 80 Marine and Navy option midshipmen from the Ohio State University last week. We had to do it virtually, of course. And, you know, when I spoke with these young men and women about leadership and some of their questions, it hit me. I'm like, this generation is so much better than we were. And the next generation is going to pick up the torch and hold the line. And then to everyone, happy Thanksgiving. God bless America. Thanks for the opportunity, Steve.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure having you. And, you know, you talked about Brian Decker a couple of times in your book. And, as a special operator, I worked at selection and assessment. And then, you know, we talked offline how Brian came in and made a bunch of changes. And
you know, at first when you're, you know, you when you're there at the outset, and we talked about that, you know, that's kind of like your baby. You don't like hearing anyone changing anything. Then after talking with Brian and how he changed the selection and assessment course, how much better it is now. And, you know, at the time we didn't realize we were teaching them to maybe be successful in a certain exercise rather than assessing their character. And I think, you know, when it comes to assessment and selection, your generation is light years ahead of where ours was. And as you said, these next group of people, they're going to make us all proud of what they can do, you know, in the special operations and in our in economy. I think, you know, I know a lot of people are kind of jaded about the way the direction our country's heading. I think it's still, we still have a lot to look forward to.
Could not agree more. That's just emotions with this last election. No one leader is going to take this country in a drastically different direction that people wouldn't allow it. We're in good hands. I agree with you, Steve.
All right. Hey, thanks again for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. And folks, make sure you read the book, The Talent War. This is fantastic stuff, especially for some of our veterans who are maybe active duty soldiers and sailors, Marines, airmen, who are getting ready to get out. I mean, this will definitely help you along, because I think this is the direction our business leaders need to take. It's all about people. It's all about leadership. And I think Special Ops leads the way on that. Mike, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Have you ever had a time when you search for something online and you didn't want others knowing about? I know most of you are probably thinking, well, why don't you just use incognito mode on your computer? Let me tell you something, folks. Incognito mode doesn't hide your actual activity. Doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can still see every single website you've visited. That's why when we're at home, we never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter if you get your internet from Verizon, Comcast, or any other local ISP. ISPs in the U.S. can legally sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their servers, so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most of the time, you won't even realize you have ExpressVPN on. It runs seamlessly in the background, and it's very, very easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button, and you're protected. It's available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart television. So there's no excuse for you not to be using it. Protect your online activity today with VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/softrep, and you can get an extra 3 months free with a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/softrep. Check it out, expressvpn.com/softrep, to learn more.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.